Welcome to Women Kicking Glass, the only radio show on OC Talk Radio dedicated to empowering women to be the best leaders they can be in any endeavor they choose. Patty Grimm is our host and interviews top women in a variety of fields to help women grow, learn, and lean in together. Patty has over 25 years of experience in primarily male-dominated fields in senior-level management positions. Patty is the owner of Advantage Training Limited, an organizational leadership team training company. She recently released her new book for women called Quiet Women Never Changed History. Be strong, stand out, and stand up. With the subtitle, Let's Go Kick Some Glass.
And that's exactly what we're going to do with Patty and her glass kickers this morning.
I always say you have to be really careful how you say that.
Yes. I got to think twice as I say it.
I was at an event last night, and we had a little bit of wine. I was at a Women Helping Women support group event last night, which is a wonderful charity. We have an incredible guest today, and I'm really excited to have Lisa here to talk about money. And I think this is going to be a very insightful, very interesting interview. So let me tell you a little bit about Lisa. So Lisa Peterson is a life coach who helps conscious entrepreneurs and other people fall in love with money. She combines her skills of being a longtime entrepreneur and self-made millionaire with over 20 years of experience in personal finance. She does this in a very unique way because she mixes in mindfulness practices, emotional freedom techniques, past life regression, and other healing modalities to help clients reconnect with their true selves. And we're going to talk about this specifically about removing their limiting beliefs around money, especially for women. Lisa is passionate about exposing the fallacy of lack or scarcity in our culture, while encouraging the pursuit of finding one's natural state of abundance. You can connect with Lisa on her website at lisapeterson.com or wealthclinic.com. So thanks for joining us, Lisa. It's really great to hear from you.
Hello, Patty. I'm so happy to be here with you and your listeners.
And you are in Michigan for something really exciting that I think you should brag about.
Women
don't brag enough about ourselves, and so this is your opportunity to tell us what an incredible son you have, why you're in Michigan, and you must be a great mother.
I hope so. We all try, don't we?
Yeah.
So we're here in Michigan for the world finals of Odyssey of the Mind, which is a creative problem-solving competition that my son and his team of seven from Sedona, Arizona Charter School were able to, you know, work their way here. So they're performing in about an hour and a half.
Oh, my goodness.
It's awesome. Yeah, an eight-minute skit that they do that they've been working on since last October. And it's just a treat to be here.
So they get something like an eight-page problem to solve?
Yes. It's something that my son has been participating since he was in kindergarten. It's all about taking that problem and creatively problem-solving their way through it. They create costumes, they create skits, they create songs, all kinds of stuff. In this case, they created a human-powered robot that is going to be performing.
That is incredible. And how old is he again?
He's 12.
Oh, my gosh. Is he going to be a rocket scientist?
I think so. Or he's all about the internet, I have to say. He's about writing and, you know, he's just a really creative kid who likes to play and have fun with things, the tools that we have available now. So he's one of those who likes to use everything technology. And yeah, he's just loving life in this new world.
That's incredible. That's incredible. And what amazing skills he must be gaining, because he had to compete, obviously, local in Arizona, and then in his, say, county, and then at the district level, and then at the city, county, you know, country, or the state level, and then all the way to this national. And how many kids are there?
There is over 800 teams of up to seven kids here. So
wow.
Plus all their family. It's we've taken over the whole entire Michigan State campus.
That is incredible. I only hope he doesn't go to Michigan State, because my dad is a diehard Ohio State fan.
That's funny. They do it at Ohio State, I think, every other year. So that's funny. What a combination.
Well, yeah, my brother actually had a sign in his room that said, dump your trash in Michigan. So. And Paul, our radio manager, was actually from Michigan. So we... Yeah, I'm University of Michigan. So let's talk about wealth and money. And tell us a little bit about you, Lisa, and how you got to where you are. How did you become a wealth coach or a life coach specializing in wealth and abundancy?
Great question. I have really focused on ultimately bringing my two passions together. So money was something that I, from a very young age, like earliest memories of money, started being very fascinated by the topic, and eventually got my MBA and eventually became a certified financial planner. But I have worked in the money business for over 25 years. And I also have been teaching meditation and mindfulness since the early 2000s. And about 3 years ago, I realized that my true passion was bringing these two things together. And quite frankly, at the time, I wasn't really sure how I was going to do that, but it's become a study and a science, and it's bringing a lot of wonderful discoveries as a result.
That's incredible. That's incredible. So we were chatting about this before we got on the air. It seems to me in the where we live in the U.S. that we tend to have this scarcity about money, or you call it the fallacy of our culture, of fallacy about lack of money, and that seems to be worse for women. What are some of the limiting beliefs that you've seen that women, your clients, have experienced, or those kinds of things? Why are we so afraid of money? We're afraid of having too much. We're definitely afraid of having too little. So what's going on there?
Well, first of all, you touched on something. There's actually science and research behind the fact that these studies have been done that have proven that about half of the population of North America, women, are feeling like they're a few bad moves away from destitute poverty. So we are dealing with something that doesn't really make sense. We live in one of the most wealthy cultures in the world, but yet we have half of the women being afraid that they're going to do something or be in a bad situation and then have to face these horrible circumstances. So that's where we're coming from it. I think that there's so many reasons for why this has happened. I think it has to do with, you know, the consumer culture that says that more is better. There's never a sense of sufficiency in our culture. Mm-hmm. There's also a lot of fear that has been passed down, even going back to like the Depression. I've noticed that when we had grandparents who then exposed our parents to this fear of there not being enough, it can actually be passed down generationally to the point where we are afraid, even though we've never had to worry about having food on the table, for example. So these are very basic survival fears that women have. I think there's a lot of reasons, but that's just a few of them that I've uncovered and witnessed in my work.
Yeah, and so you talk about abundance. You know, why is growing abundance so important to you? I mean, I can relate with a lot of the things that you said because I grew up in a middle class family. You know, basically the middle child, the middle class family with a mom and a dad, and dad worked the same company for 45 years. Mom was a stay at home mom, so typical family. And I never felt we didn't have money, but we always had to earn our money to get things. You know, get things that we wanted. So I had to earn half of what I wanted for a new tennis racket, or, you know, I had to earn half of what we needed to get a bicycle. And my mom was always, because my mom was raised in the Depression and she lived on a farm, and my grandfather was a coal miner in West Virginia, but also they had the farm, and they had 9 kids. And so she always was afraid of not having money. And so when something would go on sale, our garage was like a Ralph's supermarket. She had shelves of toilet paper and coffee and canned food and everything there. And it was always, every time I talked to my dad about my mom's kind of thing about money, he always went back to, well, she was raised in the Depression on a small farm, that it all came back to how she was raised and not having food. And somehow that passed on to her, kind of in her life, sort of that, you said it passes on sort of in a legacy. So how do we change that in thinking about, you know, why is growth abundance so important to you?
There's a couple ways that I come at this from. I mean, first, we'll just talk practically, right? So I worked in the money business for a long time, and I came from very little, and there was a lot of stress in my own home about having money and being able to feel safe. So that's the origination of my story. But ultimately, I came to understand that it is important, you know, as a human being, to be able to know that you financially can take care of yourself. Like, we do need to take care of that. And so I do focus a lot on awareness around financial management because it's so empowering to know about how to take care of your money. Unfortunately, in our society, we often hire other people to take care of it for us, but it's not coming from an empowered position when you hire someone else to do it and you don't understand investing, for example. So I love to teach about the practical money management tools. I also have found that when we have that fear and we don't have any instruction about how to deal with the fears, which often are very psychologically based and not logic based, so we still have money, but we're afraid of it. We're afraid of not having it, that we need to change our mind from this culture of more, more, more to being able to feel sufficiency and gratefulness for what we have, because it's very easy to get trapped in the cycle of fear. And what's amazing is when we are in a fearful state, right? I teach meditation and mindfulness. When we're in fear, that takes over. But what's fascinating is we cannot stay in the state of fear and feel gratefulness at the exact same moment. The mind doesn't allow us to do that. And yeah. So it's amazing when we start to learn how to turn our mind from fear to gratefulness, our mind shifts, we start seeing creative potential in our lives, and we start to come up with better decisions, better choices. It's quite fascinating. And so learning that it's actually sometimes very simple to shift the way that we're being about money. And obviously, there's a lot more behind it, but we have a little bit of time, and hopefully that gives you one idea.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because you say that you use mindfulness practices and emotional freedom techniques. Can you give us an example of some of those?
Sure. One of them that I'm a big fan of is called actually emotional freedom technique. It's also known as tapping. And tapping is quite fascinating. It's very inspired. The way I look at it is if you've ever gone to an acupuncturist or acupressurist where they're tapping or putting needles in the meridian points of the body, there is an energetic system, a current running through our body. And when we can actually tap these areas, so it starts at the crown of our head and it goes down to kind of the middle section of our body, we can start to actually calm the fears. So let's say we're having a panic attack about something. Maybe we just found out, actually, let me ask you, like, can you think of a situation with money where you're like, oh my gosh, this is really stressful? Because I want people to, you know, resonate with what I'm going to explain.
Yeah, because I work and I have my own company and I have my own consulting business. I've had it for many years. And in this business, there's kind of this, you can make a lot of money in a month and you can make nothing in a month. And so kind of that fear of, well, where is the next client coming from? Where am I going to get that next opportunity? Where can I get that next speaking engagement to do my speeches I do about women's empowerment, leadership, and equality? There's always that sort of where's the next one coming from?
Perfect. Yeah, because that's the kind of thing. So we have these things happening all the time. And what I do with emotional freedom technique is I will pull something that I'm feeling anxious about. In this case, where's that money going to come from? And I don't have the answer in the moment. I'll actually start to tap with understand, like bringing it all to the surface. So this is about not ignoring something that we're feeling. A lot of times we stuff down the feelings and it just makes us feel worse. So instead, a tapping routine may be something like, although I am scared to death about where the money's coming from, I fully and completely love and accept myself in this moment. Although I have no idea where the money's coming from, I fully and completely love and accept myself in this moment. And I'll do that through this cycle of tapping on my head. You know, you'll even see me driving down the road if, you know, I might be having a panic attack and I'm tapping my way through this. But what happens is as you tap, you actually start to calm down. And when you calm that system down, as we know, all of a sudden we realize, oh, I forgot. This person told me 2 weeks ago that when I had some downtime, they had an opportunity for me and I need to give them a call. Like all of a sudden these opportunities start coming in because we're calm, we're not stressed, we're not feeling fear. And it's crazy how many opportunities we actually have. We just shut them down when fear comes in. Does that help?
Yeah, but yeah, it does. And so where are you tapping? Because I remember watching a TV show. It was about weight watching. Mm-hmm. It was about weight loss, and it was a British gentleman that was talking about tapping to lose weight. And he had some techniques of where you would tap. So give an example of if you're in that situation where you're thinking about where's the next opportunity coming from, where and how do you tap?
So one of the easiest ways that's actually really powerful, and are you right-handed or left-handed?
I am right-handed.
Okay, so if you're looking at the palm of your right hand right now,
okay,
facing you,
we are.
You take your left hand, and you've got your four fingers on the left hand. You bring those four fingers to the karate chop on your right hand. So you just move them on the side. So you take the four fingers at the end tips of the fingers, and you touch, you tap where you would like karate chop that thick fleshy part of your palm on the side to the left of your, and you just start tapping there. So you use those fingers, and the fingers are tapping the side of your hand. Do you feel how good that feels? It actually feels very comforting.
Yeah, it's a little bit calming. It's kind of interesting.
Isn't it? So this is where we start. So we'll just keep tapping there, and we could actually do it just there. Sometimes that's all I need to do. And we're saying out loud to ourselves, we're bringing whatever fear we're feeling. So in this case, although I'm really scared about my financial situation this month, and I fully and completely love and accept myself. Sometimes we may even feel like we're feeling guilty because maybe we made a mistake. We might say, I forgive myself. So although I'm not sure how I'm going to pay the bills this month, I forgive myself. Although I'm not sure how I'm going to pay my bills, I forgive myself. It's quite amazing because we're taking everything that we normally stuff down inside of us and we're bringing it to the surface and we're not feeling resistance, and all of a sudden the energy starts to move. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's very fascinating. So have you written a book?
I did not invent this, so just saying.
Okay. I was just curious because I was just thinking that would be interesting. Because one of the things you said is I've known this for a while is that people think they can multitask, right? They can do emails, they can talk, they can, you know, be in a meeting, paying attention, and doing emails or their phone, whatever, at the same time. And science has actually, you know, researched that you can't do two. Your mind cannot hold two thoughts at the same time. So if you're obsessed about something, if you're thinking about scarcity and lack of money, whatever, lack of whatever it happens to be, if that's occupying your mind can't also be grateful at the same time. Is that what you're saying?
Totally. Nor can it be creative. So if you're in fear, you're not going to come up with creative solutions. It's very rare to do that. Not the best solutions that are available to us.
Okay. So what are the three stages you walk people through when it comes to shifting from a state of fear and lack of abundance to a feeling of abundance?
So the first thing is awareness. So we just focused on the awareness. Like, there's a problem. I don't know what to do about it. So awareness is the first stage. The next stage is actually having a tool, having a way to move the energy through. So there's lots of different ways. We just talked about emotional freedom technique. I like to use meditation. I use a lot of different tools, but that gives you an idea. So being able to, be with the pain, not resist the pain, for example. And then the third part of that is actually noticing that when we release things, new opportunities are appearing to us. And it's a great time to step into what I call receiving. So I've noticed that oftentimes women are really good at giving to others, right? Mm-hmm. We're all pretty good at that. The problem is that no one's ever said, hey, receiving is a skill. Receiving is an art. Receiving is important. We need to give and receive so that we refill our buckets. And so the third part of that is actually opening to receive whatever we're ready to receive. That may be money, that may be support, that may be love. It can be whatever we want, but receiving is really, really helpful.
Yeah, one of the things I usually do when I'm doing a workshop with women, but also just in general, I ask people to just imagine that right now they have a scale in front of them. And they've got like the old-fashioned scale that goes up and down, like the justice scale, for lack of a better image. And I ask people to think about how much time and money they invest in giving to others or taking care of others. And for women, it's really pretty skewed. And think about the amount of time that you invest in their people, in their lives, in taking care of them, in their own learning, in their own development, how much time we spend with our kids. And think about that and then compare that to the scale, the other side of the scale, how much you actually invest in yourself or receiving for yourself. And the scales are pretty unbalanced, as you can imagine. So maybe that piece of that is, how do I balance that better? And you probably notice this, and I try and catch myself from doing it. When somebody gives you a compliment like, you know, Lisa, that's a beautiful color on you. And what's the first thing most women say?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, or, you know, I got it at Target. I mean, that's my, except I call it Le Target. I got it at Le Target. Yeah, so we tend to not want to take those compliments, and women say I'm sorry too much too, which is also a pet peeve of mine, because we say sorry when it's not even our fault, not even our fault. So what do you see people struggle? What do you see people struggle with most when it comes to money?
So I think that one of the big things is not trusting themselves, feeling like they don't have all the answers, they don't have the experience, they don't have the education. You know, there's, I think, trusting ourselves around money. There's a lot there.
Yeah, yeah.
Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. So you had mentioned meditation earlier, and I'm going to ask you for something for a second, because I'm one of these people that I say I am meditation challenged, and I suffer from what I call monkey brain, which is where I will sit. I've tried to buy, you know, apps, the 10% happier app that the guy on Good Morning America was doing. I've tried listening to music or video or, you know, like something on my computer while I'm laying there or sitting there trying to meditate. And I could sit there for maybe five minutes, and then all these random monkey brain thoughts start coming in and jumping around in my head. And, oh, I need to do this, or here's a thought for the book, or here's something I need to put into my next presentation. How do you calm monkey brain in meditation and your techniques?
One of the easiest things that we all have access to is our breath. And I love to focus on the breath because it feels so good. It's very immediate. And we can do something as simple as taking nice, deep breaths where it starts in our belly and it goes all the way up. And we hold our breath, and then we let it go. And the breath is actually a meditation. It can become a meditation that also makes our body feel better. And we notice a stillness, right? Because when we're holding our breath, there's not very much that we can do. And I think that that's, we're just waiting. And then we let it go. And then we do it again. And even three deep breaths calms us so quickly down that if we try to meditate without starting with our breath, I think that it is true we're going to really struggle. Does that help a little?
That does help. I'll try that as well. And just trying. Somebody said just let the brain go where it's going to go, and eventually it'll come to a place. It's one of the things I know everybody talks about meditation all the time, and it's something I think I'm meditation challenged, but I will give that a try. I know that if I'm going to be doing a big presentation and that I'm looking out at the audience, one of the things I try to do to calm myself, if you're ever presenting in front of a group, is I try and get there a little bit early and meet a few people so I know somebody in the audience, or I can make a connection with somebody, or hi, you know, how far was your drive, or how long did it take you to get here, some ways. But then before I get on stage or do the presentation, I will sit there and take like five kind of deep cleansing breaths, kind of not quite a Lamaze breath, but that you learned in childbirth, but just kind of a nice deep breath to calm down a little bit, and that seems to help a bit.
Beautiful.
So what do you see people struggle most, especially women? What do you do to help women when they're stuck in this scarcity thinking?
There's a big part of my work is around helping people to notice the beliefs that they're holding on to. And so when we start to notice these beliefs, some of them are very helpful about money, and a lot of them are very damaging. And so I love to help people go through asking questions, you know, what is it that has caused you a great deal of concern? It's part of my work to dive in, and we can even do this with money. One way that we can find out what's causing us a lot of stress is to actually write a letter to money or have a conversation with money where we tell money how we feel about it. And in the course of telling money how we feel about it, we'll probably bring to the surface 5 or 10 beliefs that we have about money that we're not even realizing we're holding on to. Does anything come to mind when I tell you, like, if you were to talk to money, what would you say to money, Patty?
What would I say to money? I love you.
Ooh, that's a powerful one.
You know, I'm at a stage in my life where, you know, yes, it'd be nice to win the $100 million or $200 million lottery, and my husband and I always fantasize about that once in a while. Like, what would we do? And what would we do with whether we won, you know, $1 million or $500 million? What would you do with it? And we sort of fantasize about that once in a while. In fact, sometimes when I can't sleep, I will sit there and think, okay, so if I did win $10 million, what would I do? And then I try to imagine what my house, where we would buy a home, where we would, what charities we would give to, how we would give the money to the kids. And I kind of go through that process, and then eventually I get to the point of, well, what furnishings do I put in the house? Right? If I could afford the money, what kind of decorations would I put in? What would the house look like? I don't know if this is what you're talking about, but it's sort of, you know, if I had the money, what would I do? And where would I travel? What would my freedom be? Because to me, I love money. It's about power. It's having the ability to travel, to be with my kids, to see my kids a little more often because they live in Portland and Seattle area. So those are kind of some of the things that I think about money. It's like, you know, where can I get more?
Yeah, well, even your response, because I think other people listening probably don't have that response all the time. I think that when we feel like, yeah, I love you, it's actually very powerful. And it's probably why you've done so well in your own life with money. When a lot of times I'll hear women say, you don't visit me enough. Like, you're not visiting me enough is what they want to tell money.
Why don't he write, right?
Like, I want more of you, but where are you? Where have you been all my life? You know, it's kind of, you think of like the guy that you've wanted, you know, if you're single and you're wanting a guy, you're like, okay, where have you been? Well, some people feel that way about money. And it's really important to think about the things that come up, because the best way to know if you've got a healthy relationship with money is, could you, if you were to say, take the things you're saying to money and tell a boyfriend, girlfriend, someone else, this is how you feel about them, and that wouldn't sound very good, then you know you've got a problem.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. So why don't you, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and before we take the commercial break, can you make sure you give us how to get in contact with you? And please spell out your name, so because your Lisa spelled a little bit differently. I have another friend named Lisa who spells her name the same as you. Please be sure to spell out how we can get in touch with you, and then we'll take a commercial break and come back and keep talking.
Wonderful. It's LisaPetersson.com and also at wealthclinic.com. You can find me in both places.
Okay, we'll take a quick commercial.
Imagine what it would feel like to lose everything. Your job, your home, your family, your dignity. This has happened to thousands of the men, women, veterans, and young adults we serve at Working Wardrobes. What do we do to help? We provide career development services, life skills workshops, job skills training. We provide the perfect interview outfit, and we get clients placed in jobs. Call Working Wardrobes, 714-210-2460. Donate, volunteer, invest, hire.
When it comes to pioneers in their respective industries, we all know the Apples, Starbucks, and Trader Joe's of the world. In the realm of recruiting, Decision Toolbox is the industry's best-kept secret. With 90% of their business from referrals and repeat customers, for over 20 years, Decision Toolbox's U.S.-based team of recruiters, sourcers, professional writers, quality personnel, and tech support has perfected a Six Sigma approach to talent management. No matter the size of the project, Decision Toolbox delivers incredible results. A cost per hire less than half of what contingency firms charge. With the winning candidate presented in an average of 14 days. All with a 12-month candidate warranty. With results like that, Decision Toolbox won't be a secret for long. Visit us at www.dtoolbox.com for more information.
All right, back to Patty and her guest.
And this is Patty Grimm. I'm with Lisa Peterson. She's a life coach who helps people fall in love with money. So we're talking about money today. So what other ways do you see women struggle when they're stuck in scarcity thinking about money?
One of the ways that I think is really important for your listeners to consider is this whole issue around salary and what we're paid and what we're charging others. So if we're, you know, entrepreneurs, what we charge, and then if we're receiving a paycheck, then what we are being paid. I cannot tell you how often it comes up that women are not receiving the kind of income that mm-hmm. they are worthy of receiving. Would you agree with that?
Oh, definitely. And the research definitely shows that because women are still paid 80% of what men are paid. The numbers are actually worse for African American and Hispanic. So Hispanic women basically get 67 cents on a dollar, and African American women get 65 cents on a dollar in terms of their pay for doing an equal job. And it was interesting that even Sheryl Sandberg, that is the CEO of Facebook, she was the CEO at Google. She talks about in her book Lean In how when she was negotiating for salary and she looked at the salary she was being offered and really asked herself, "Am I really worth this? And why aren't I asking for more because a man would?"
It's so true. I have a kind of frightening story that happened to me. I worked in banking and finance for much of my career. In the 90s, I was working for a major bank, and I had a pretty senior position. And I picked up some paper on the copier one day, went back to my office, and then took everything home with me. And when I got home, I was like writing Bart. It was in San Francisco, writing Bart home. I was like, uh-oh, this wasn't supposed to be in my printout. And it was the salaries of all of my peers, the whole team. And it was one of those moments where it's like, okay, I'm sitting, you know, what do you do, right?
Do I look at it or not?
I totally looked. And sure enough, the men were paid 25 to 40% more than the women across the board. And I was working for a woman boss.
Wow. That's interesting. So I worked in banking for 15 years. I worked at a couple big banks here in California. And it's one of those things that you think about, well, when I made vice president, right? So they get the congratulations, you made vice president, blah, 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 you know, woo, blah, blah. And I sort of asked, is there any money that goes with this? Oh, no, you just get the title and you get a fancy business card. And I thought, this seems not quite right. So what can women do? Because if we know, or we think we might be being paid less, how do we get our minds set or our mindfulness in the right way to go in and have the courage to say to our boss, I think I'm worth more?
Yeah, that's a big question, isn't it? It's very hard because I will say a lot of people, no matter what we say right now, won't do it. But let's just talk about it for a second, Patty, because
yes.
I don't know that anyone has the perfect answer to this. But I mean, what I've found is that we need to really focus on our value first. Like, more than anything, the thing that I've noticed is that women shortchange their skills, they shortchange their abilities, they shortchange their contributions. And so for me, part of the way that I changed things in my own, you know, when I was receiving a salary, is I paid a lot of attention to the bottom line. Like mm-hmm. when I was going to go in and I was yep. going to ask for money, I wanted to know what was the contribution of the value that I brought to the organization. And I paid a lot of attention to the numbers. And I knew that, you know, if a project had a certain dollar amount assigned to it that we were trying to make or that we were shooting for, I wanted to pay a lot of attention to that. And I used those numbers to go in and say, hey, this is how much my division is worth. This is how much we're making for the organization. Well, I feel like I deserve a raise. You know, this is a lot of money at stake. You know that you wouldn't be doing this without my contribution. So I focus on the numbers because the numbers talk, and that's where women struggle a lot of times. They don't realize. They get wrapped up in some other story. They forget about the bottom line.
I couldn't agree more. I think that is very smart advice of saying, here's what my value is. Here's what I'm contributing to the organization. Here's how much, if you're in sales, here's how much new sales I brought into the company. We have to get better at speaking bottom line language. And even if you need to go buy a book or take a course for, you know, financial management for non-financial managers or something, just be able to speak about money, because I think we need to talk about our worth. And actually in Cheryl's book, Lean In, she said the way she finally got over it is she realized that her husband was telling her, you are worth this and you should be asking for more. If he doesn't give you more money, you should be asking more for more stock or something in equivalent value because you're worth it. Say what your value is. And what she finally said to Mark Zuckerberg when she was negotiating with him was, you know, Mark, this is the one and only time you and I are going to be on the opposite table about something like this. We're only going to talk about this, my starting salary, once. Let's have this conversation. Let's agree on it in a very businesslike way, and let's move on. And then we'll never be on the opposite sides of the negotiating table again, except probably until the next year when the bonuses came out. But and I've got a daughter in Seattle. Her name is Elkie, and she works for a dentist. And I think this dentist shakes in his boots when it comes to salary negotiating with her because she just rides him to the very end to squeak out every dime, every dollar. And if it's not, you know, if she doesn't get the money, and she's been there for 15, 18 years, she runs the place, basically. He probably knows she wouldn't leave. She might, but I doubt it. But then she also thinks about other things, like we've always in our family always had, everybody gets free dental care. No matter what you need, all related family to mother-in-law's cousins get free dental care, and that's a value of money. So maybe think about something other than money if you're having trouble with that.
Well, can I add to that? Because I think you're right. Like, a lot of times women will focus on some of the soft things, but ultimately the soft, you know, if it's like employee morale, for example, so they're in charge of that. Well, you can still take anything in an enterprise and connect it back to the bottom line.
Absolutely.
You need to make that process, right? You need to connect the dots. You can't just say, well, I'm contributing to a morale. You need to explain why morale actually affects profits. It's very important.
Yeah, and I apologize occasionally to my audience because I'm a research geek. I'm truly, truly a research geek, and I use a lot of Gallup research. So Gallup, that does all the political campaigning stuff, they also have a huge research arm that looks at employee engagement, customer engagement, women's leadership, a whole bunch of things. But basically, Gallup says that 32% of the average workforce is actively engaged. And those are people that are actually not only just doing the job and coming in from 8 to 5 or 9 to 6, whatever their hours are, but they're contributing more, like they're trying to help the company get better. There's a percentage of people that are just engaged, which means they come in from 8 to 5, they do their job, go home, they won't do any more, they won't do any less. They just do a job, and you need those people. But then you've got people that are actively disengaged. And, you know, Gallup estimates that the U.S. economy is losing $500 billion a year because of this lack of employee engagement. I mean, there's a way you can measure that in a company. So if you're a woman who's, say, in HR or in a division, or you're a manager where you're managing people and you're contributing to this more employees being engaged, if you move 10% or 5% of those people from disengaged to actively engaged, you know, how much that would contribute to the bottom line. The other fact to possibly use is that the cost of turnover. It used to be about $150,000 to replace an employee because it goes beyond just the salary. It's the training time. It's the hiring. It's all that stuff. So you could say, you know, I'm contributing to the bottom line because we're having less turnover, and the turnover costs them actual money. So I encourage people more and more to think like a business person. Speak the language. If you're talking to a leader and you're negotiating, you don't negotiate when you get in the room. You need to be negotiating all year. Like, every time you do something, you need to document that and let them know that you did it and take credit for it. Another thing women don't do well. We tend to say, well, my team did it. No, you did it. Or if you're really struggling with saying, I did this, say, my team and I did this, but put yourself first. So really kind of important there. So what's the one most important thing someone can do in a last minute to change their mind about fear?
So we covered a little bit of this. This is that instantaneous experience of moving from fear to gratefulness, to being able to look around in your life and see all of the things that you have to be grateful for in that moment. Now, you may still go back to the thing at hand, but again, coming from a place of love and appreciation of where, you know, who you are, where you're at in life, is a far more effective negotiation technique, you know, even with money, like we were talking about. You're going to go in and ask for more money. Coming from a place of gratefulness is actually more powerful than coming from a place of fear.
Yeah, this is in my book, but I've also told people, and a friend of mine recently kind of brought this back to me, because I always kept a gratitude file. And I do. I practice gratitude every morning. I talk about things I'm grateful for every evening. I talk about things I'm grateful for. But to keep an actual physical gratitude file, and there were a couple things I would keep in my gratitude file. I actually kept a paper one and one on my computer in case my computer crashed. So I always had a gratitude file, and I would keep things in there like when someone said I did a good job or when some project came in on time and under budget. I would document things to keep in that gratitude file. So if I ever had a bad day, I could look to that gratitude file and say, oh, I am okay. Right? Like you said, I fully accept myself. I wrote down the words you said. You said you fully accept yourself.
Yeah, I love
I'm fully I fully accept and I fully I am fully capable accept and love myself for what I can do, and that be able to have that documentation in a gratitude file, the things that you're grateful for, the things that you do well, is one of those important things. Now, one of the things I noticed that you had in one of the documents you sent me, you have something called a flower assessment. Did I get that right?
Flower. The wealth flower
assessment. So tell us about that.
Yeah, you know, just like we're talking about, there's so many opportunities to do inventories and kind of say, what are we grateful for? And there's also this opportunity to take a look at our lives, and rather than operate from where we've been, it's like looking at the things that are important to us and where we're heading in our life. And so the Wealth Flower is a series of questions that people can get by going to the Wealth Clinic website. It's right there at the top of the page. And I wanted to create, I'm really good at asking questions, right? As coaches, I think that's one of the most important things that we can do for others is ask questions and help them do their own processing and you know, answering questions to bring things and their truths to the surface. So the Wealth Flower is a series of questions that help you to get really crystal clear on what's most important to you in the core areas of your life, seeing it all on one page. And it's like an inventory. So that's one thing that I've found is really, really helpful to help people move in the direction of creating the life that they want to be living rather than the shoulds and the woulds and the maybes. It's like, well, what do you really want? Because once you put it down on paper, you actually start to begin the process of bringing it into reality.
So what are a couple of the questions?
So there are things like, you know, let's talk about money in particular. It's, again, around what do you want your financial situation to look like? Like, let's just start there. Instead of what do I think it can look like, it's like, what do I want to take a stand for? I want to have no debt. Let's go there. Like, for me, debt has been something that my parents had a lot of debt. It got them into trouble when I was growing up. So one of the things is I long ago said to myself, I do not want debt. I want to pay off my mortgage. I don't want any debt whatsoever. And so the question is what do you want when it comes to money? You know, what's going to make you sleep better at night? There's lots of different answers to that question, but that's an example.
Okay, that's great. So what are some practical steps you suggest for growing net worth?
So I'm teaching a class right now. Women, you know, we're focusing on our money stories, healing our money stories over a 90-day period. And I think that there's what I've noticed is that we don't spend enough time thinking about building our net worth. And so I can just share with you that the epiphanies that are coming for everyone are coming as a result of just shining the light of attention towards building our own net worths. Instead of living, again, from scarcity modeling, you know, we're living from what do I want? Like, just in this past, I guess we're about halfway through, so what would that be, 45 days into it, most of the women have set goals that we all agreed we were going to pursue together, and they just put them in the Facebook group, and everyone who set those goals are actually achieving them. So, you know, it was maybe bringing in another $5,000 of income, bringing in, paying off some, you know, a line of credit or a credit card. Like, everyone took a goal and they focused on it in a short period of time. And so what I found is that most of the time, the reason that our worth does not change is that we're not spending enough time thinking, what do I want? And then creating a path for doing it. The other thing is women are very tribal. We really like to set goals together and accomplish them and be able to be like, woo, woo, you know, like I accomplished that. And so again, it's like bringing people who are wanting to do these goal setting together with us, because money is not talked about enough in a very open and loving way. So we find a couple people that we don't feel are going to judge us, but they're really wanting to stretch their, you know, get out of their comfort zone. And we set some goals, and now everyone's achieving them. And people are like, Lisa, if I thought it was going to be that simple, I should have been doing this 20 years ago. Like, look at that. I'm doing it. And it's actually not that hard to achieve it. It wasn't setting these goals around my financial situation. And now I know it's actually quite powerful. So that's kind of one way to get things going. Set goals, set them in the shortest, you know, not 5 years out, but like a month out or 2 months out. And then bring a few people into the discussion so that you can do this work together and report back. How's it going? That simple.
Okay. That's interesting. Anything else?
There's a lot. You know, again, I think knowing where our biggest fears lie and not allowing those fears to take over. So again, bringing them into awareness and, you know, find out more about something like tapping, like we were talking about earlier, like whatever you can do to create an environment of less fear, less scarcity, and more attention. You know, maybe taking a class, learning more about investing, like find the areas mm-hmm. that you do not feel strong in and pursue them.
Okay, great. So how does the inner work connect into the growth of one's wealth?
I found in all of these years of working with, you know, women in particular, a lot of us suffer from not feeling enough, not feeling like we are bringing enough into the world. There's this deficiency of ourselves. And so the big switch in changing our attention is to see what it is that we really are, like we talked about, bringing into the world. Also, paying attention to the things that we're deeply passionate about that we may not be giving a lot of attention to. Mm-hmm. That's another area that I like to help people, help women in particular. What I've found is that the thing that we can actually make the most money around in this life ties into the gifts that we have, but yet the gifts that we want to bring into the world are the things that are the most scary to us. And so we end up hiding those parts of ourselves and not bringing them out into awareness. And so the more we can get in touch with things that maybe even scare us and play around with those, experiment with them. I mean, you know, I think you know my story. I faced a lot of tragedies to be able to ultimately identify with the idea that the gifts that I had in this life were things that were calling me, but I was very scared, and I kind of had to be pushed off a cliff almost to try them out. For each of us, it's different, but I just want to encourage people to go outside of their comfort zone and, you know, experiment with the things that they're most passionate about and not hold back.
Yeah, on your website, you talk about moving from I don't know to wow, let's go.
Yeah.
And I really like that. A couple of the things I'm seeing saw on your website was, you know, and I've told people this, do what you love and the money will follow. I've told my kids that. I tell kids when I go to middle schools and talk to young girls and do mock interviews or about careers, you know, doing what you really enjoy while making money doing it. You'll be more productive. You'll be more passionate. You'll be better at what you're doing. And then knowing what your why is and why you're doing it. So we're almost out of time, and I want to make sure we know how to get in touch with you. I'd like your final thoughts or final words on how women can really go kick some glass around money.
Favorite topic. So I think the most important thing that you can be doing, maybe leaving this conversation, is know that if you don't trust yourself about money, others are going to follow that. So the more you can do to trust yourself, meaning if you need to get educated, more educated about money, if you need to deal with the fears that are coming up, then deal with the fears. Pay attention to whatever it is that is holding you back with money and go for it. Get out of your comfort zone. You know, my website is filled with resources. I am constantly creating things that come at it from different angles about money shadows and money fears. And I mean, my podcast, you know, is focused a lot of conversations about bringing greater awareness to money. And the more that you can do that, the, I think, more enjoyment you'll find with money and the less fear you'll have about it. So I think you can go kick some glass by being more empowered around money, and do not don't stop until you feel like you're on the right track.
And I'll go back to your quote. It's about moving from I don't know to wow, let's go. So finally, give us how to get in touch with you. Spell your name again one more time, because some people may not know how to spell Lisa or how to the right way to spell Peterson. And then also your website. And then we'll close off. Thanks so much. You've been a great guest. But one more time, how do we get in touch with you?
Thank you. It's LeisaPeterson.com, LeisaPeterson.com, and also Wealth, as in WEALTH, Clinic, all one word, .com.
Okay, great. Well, thanks, Lisa. It's been great having you on the show. We were talking about maybe getting your son on a show for something to talk about what he does, because it's just fascinating. He's got 55,000 followers and millions of people on his thing. So you're doing a great job, Mom. You're doing a great job.
Thank you so much, Patty.
Okay, and this is Patty Grimm with Women Kicking Glass. You can get in touch with me at pattygrimm@live.com, and that's PattyGrimm at live.com. Also, you can reach me at my other business site, which is AdvantageTraining.com as well. If you'd like to talk to me or communicate with me about what you'd like to hear on a future show, if you'd like to be on the show, and also if you'd like to book me for a speech, presentation, or workshop, because I do some great workshops around Let's Go Kick Some Glass, 5 Ways to Be an Empowered Woman, and also Play the Game by Your Rules, How to Be a Powerful Woman Negotiator. So I look forward to chatting with you all, and have a great week, and let's go kick some glass.
Thanks for listening to Women Kicking Glass, the only radio show on OC Talk Radio dedicated to empowering women to be the best they can be. Listen each week or download the podcast at patty.grimm.podbean.com. To reach out to Patty to schedule a speech webinar or to learn more about her leadership and team training, contact Patty at pattygrimm@live.com. For more information about her company and her books, have a kicking day.